Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, hello, hello. This is Adrienne Berg, and this is the Longevity Club Online. Fun, friendship, and finances for the fabulous decades ahead. Could I figure out any more alliterations for you? Well, this is the unique show that brings guests to you, answers your questions about everything from finances to good living to fashion.
And now it's time for Longevity Club Online with Adrienne Berg.
And hello, 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 and we are going to have a spectacular hour together today. Now, for those of you who don't know, you're just surfing the web, you happen to hear this voice. I never feel you can hear too much of my voice. My name is Adrienne Berg. I've been on the air for, God knows, since 1988, on every possible medium, telling you about what life is like at different ages as I pass through those ages. And right now, I'm over 60, not much, a couple of minutes over 60. And so is everybody else in this country. There are 78 million baby boomers, people born between the ages of 1946 to 1964. We're not a demographic, we're a psychographic, which means that if you want to reach us in any way, you have to do it by who we are and what our attitudes are. And very much today, in this next hour, you're going to be learning about attitudes. We have two terrific attitude gurus. That's what I call them. There's Michelle Germain. She's got so many degrees after her name, I don't even have time to tell you in an hour show. She's a true expert on relationships and recovery from breakups, somebody who specializes in mind-body-spirit connection, something that all of our statistics show are extremely important to baby boomers. And in fact, even the Direct Marketing Association just published a report saying that what boomers want is not things, but experiences, feeling good, feeling hopeful. Her new book is The Jill Principle, with a recovery map for women following a breakup, a divorce, and of course, as we get older, different kinds of loss. Moving away, Alzheimer's is a loss, of course, passing away of a spouse or a loved one is a loss. So all of these things can be accessed through getting in contact with ourselves, and Michelle Germain is going to talk about that. And another area of our life, we don't ask. Now, if we don't start asking, when will we start? If we're baby boomers halfway or all the way through our careers, if we are now volunteers and fundraisers, if it's time for us to go out and live the life that we deserve and expected to have in this terrible economy, but in another way, this beautiful and opening up world that we have around us, we're going to have to ask for it. And that's not an easy thing to do, particularly for women. And although this is not a woman-only issue, sometimes men with asking problems get pushed out because they go to, I've seen it, support groups, and they're the only guy. Remember, who doesn't ask for directions? The guys don't even ask about learning to ask. That's how far back in the line they are. So we're going to be speaking with an expert in how to ask. Right now, I do want to remind you that last week was an extremely important week. It was the American Association of Senior Housing Conference, which took place in Washington, that we marched on our legislature. We asked that some of the stimulus package be devoted to health care, long-term care, at-home care. You know that this is the week that Rockland County, one of the oldest demographics in the country and in the state of New York, put in a grant that I helped them prepare on brain fitness, because we think that the active brain is the most important aspect of successful aging. So for those of you who want to put your two cents in, who want to reach legislatures, who want to be advocates, who want to meet each other, please go to longevityclubonline.com. That is the club for which this radio show is the broadcast arm. It is a free club, free membership. You get to travel with us. You get thousands of discounts. For people who are 50 and above, you get to meet and hear some of the greatest minds and trendsetters in beauty, aging, health, money for people over 45 and 50, all the way up to way over 100. And for those who are interested in some of my work, my latest book by Wiley is the publisher, is How Not to Go Broke at 102. And you'll find that on Amazon. So you get all kinds of discounts, all kinds of information if you go to longevityclubonline.com, connect to Adrienne, we will be sending you some terrific information. We do lots of free teleseminars. We did one last week. We're doing another one tomorrow evening at 10 o'clock Eastern Time, 7 o'clock Pacific on those of you who want to be entrepreneurs after age 50 and how to do it fast, cheap, and fun. So if you want to get information on that, again, just connect to Adrian and we will shoot out an e-blast to you on how to get on our teleseminar tomorrow evening. So after all that, let me say again hello to Michelle Germain. Very, very pleased to have the author of The Jill Principle with us. And let's and her website, by the way, and I'll give you that to you a few times, is her name. It's Michelle, M-I-C-H-E-L-E, Germain, G-E-R-M-A-I-N.com. So hi, Michelle. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you, Adrienne.
It's a pleasure to have you here. And, of course, I want to jump in a little bit by setting the stage and have you explain to everybody, as a relationship expert, how do you help people and why the Jill Principle? Why everything do you find the pain of divorce, which is so prevalent today, something that is coming up in people's lives?
Well, to the first answer to your question, how do I help people? The most important that I tell people is the most important relationship is the relationship we have with ourselves. And that includes, for me, the fullness of all of who we are, our bodies, our minds, and our spirit. And so what I do with any loss, whether it's a divorce or any kind of change that occurs in our life that requires us a challenge, I help people to get reconnected to themselves so they don't stay stuck. Such as, what are you telling yourself? What are you telling yourself about what just happened to you? Are you telling yourself you're a failure? Are you telling yourself you can't go on? What mental thoughts are you having? And then to help them connect with their body, what are they feeling? Are they stuck in some guilt? Are they stuck in the inability to express and reach out, like you were mentioning just earlier? Are they isolating? Because my motto is, you know, we don't hide out, we reach out. So I help them to get connected to their body because the body is a life of the feelings, the mind is a life of the thoughts. And of course, all of us, whether we're younger or older, we are going to go through many challenges. So the question begins, how do we move beyond it, this breakup? We do it by knowing we're human, and we must go through the grief, but also the spiritual piece, whatever language you put to it, whatever words that helps you to define your spiritual essence, that will help us find the gift in the crisis, that will help us to move beyond the crisis, and it will help us to accept the unacceptable, because many times we are faced with these challenges, whether it's divorce, a loss of someone, a loss of a job. I was just talking to a man who was downsized twice from his company, and all he knew was success. He could not figure out how to move beyond that until we got to his mental, his physical, and the spiritual piece. What's the gift here? How can we move beyond this?
Now, one of the things I think people would be wondering is, and I think we're at a time when people agree with what you're saying. I think there might be a time way before New Age and way before the current more self-actualization movement that we didn't see the world as holistically as we do now. I think we do see it. I think even the hardcore people are going out there and they're getting massages and they're eating good food and they're becoming green and they're realizing, particularly as we age, that our emotionality leads our life. What I think we're looking for is technique. How do you do this? Now, I'd like you to tell us about this in the context of something extremely interesting that you've written in to me, actually, which is, look at the historical wounds. How do you deal with the historical wounds on long-term relationships which fail? And what is the technique for coping with that sort of thing that you might help someone?
Well, again, the people, we're not taught, Adrian, how to deal with feelings. Most of us, you know, have learned to stuff them. So the healing, the healing really comes from really the connection with the feelings. We don't have to go and, you know, understand every historical event of our life, but we do have to be able to connect with the feeling. So I often tell people to, you know, everyone wants to stay in their head and talk about it. And I say, well, what's going on in your body? Where is the tightness in your body? Where do you feel like you're holding something? What parts of your body feel numb? What parts of your body feel alive? Where is the fatigue? Where is the heaviness? So I help them to tune into, and just by asking yourself these questions on a daily basis and giving yourself the instruction that I'm going to listen to what my body is saying, because the body speaks its mind. It tells you. And when we can connect with it, oh, my gosh, I'm feeling pretty guilty about that. That is a healing moment. Sometimes we can get it in our heads, but we don't really release it until somehow we're connected to our body, because our body is what is holding it and keeping us from moving forward.
So
that's one technique.
Yeah, let's see if that might, maybe I'm being too optimistic here. Let's see if that might avert some disasters. Let me tell you what I mean by that. You are also an expert on loss because of the economic situation, the example you just gave of the fellow who was downsized twice.
Correct.
And
correct.
Also breakups, marital breakups, because of financial issues. And so many people
sure.
have that. Now, those are outside. Those are external things that are happening to people that then create blame, pain, and loss, breakup. Is it possible to feel those feelings, connect with those feelings the way you're suggesting, allow yourself to feel them, and then maybe you don't get the divorce? Maybe you feel that you've overcome some of that pain and you see it as different from something that requires you to run away from the situation? Or is that too optimistic?
No, you know, I believe that if we are connected to ourselves in the way that I'm suggesting, and then you also say that many people in our society are now really sort of speaking about the same thing, mind, body, spirit. We're
yes.
all wanting to be connected to it. But are we doing the work to be connected to it? If we are, then I truly believe we can be successful at anything we choose to do. We can be successful in the relationship. We can be successful at understanding where we're coming from, our own pain, so we don't act it out. We can be successful like this man who just got downsized, not to stay stuck in it, but knowing that he has some guilt that he's releasing, but he can move on. So the more we understand ourselves, the more successful we can be in anything. So the answer to your question is yes. I think people can then stay in a marriage possibly and not get a divorce, because what they're doing is they're looking at, what is my part here I am playing? What am I bringing to this situation that is maybe harmful to me? What can I change within myself, rather than focusing it all out on the outer world and blaming everybody else?
So the old Michael Jackson song comes to mind, start with the man in the mirror. But it isn't easy, because particularly if it's a divorce situation, you want to blame. You want to strike out in other directions. And the Jill Principle provides a recovery roadmap for people who, after a divorce, and some of your teachings perhaps would be such that they could prevent that divorce in the first place. So it works on a lot of different levels. Now, one of the things that you have a certification is bioenergetics. This is what I mean. I think there was a time that I would have said bioenergetics analysis, and everybody
right.
would tune out. Now right. everyone says, what? What is that? What is that? Where
right.
do you get that? What does that do for me? You want to tell everybody what that is?
Well, you know, it's a type of actual psychotherapy that's been around for a very long time. I do have a traditional degree as a psychotherapist, but this is a special training in the mind-body connection, because most of us from childhood, you know, well, first of all, let me start by saying our bodies carry our personal histories. They hold everything, the memories from everything.
We now know that there is actually brain cell memory, too.
Exactly. And so, and none of us go through our life without experiencing some hurts, betrayals and so on and so forth. But what happens with the child, it learns to stuff the feelings, and then they actually become buried in the body in the form of muscular tension. So over a long period of time, we don't even recognize it. It's like holding your fist very tight. If you hold your fist tight for like about a minute, an hour, a month, a year, you
right.
begin not to feel anything. You don't even feel your fist at all.
Mm-hmm.
On some level, that happens with the body as we get older. When we tighten up to block something, we tighten it over years, and before we know it, we don't even realize we're tight. Our shoulders are up around our ears.
It's just who we are.
It becomes who we are. And then we lose the natural gracefulness of our bodies, which continues through all our whole life, because grace is not learned. Gracefulness is not learned. It is part of our natural endowment. So bioenergetics is a way in which, again, just helps the individual tune into these patterns that they've now become disconnected from and begin to go, oh gosh, I really am holding my body like that, and what is that? What is it my body trying to say, and how can I soften that? And so I help people to be able to tune in to find those places that they're holding that they may not be as connected to. And so once they do become connected, they can begin to soften it. They begin to open that area of the body, loosen it, become more graceful, more energy comes in, more vitality. And that's just not because you're 20 years old or 30. It just comes in naturally because now you've opened your body up and letting the life force move through you.
Now, I have had, in fact, this week, I personally had guided meditation. I've done chi massages, and a lot of the people who listen to the show know what I'm talking about because they're either practitioners or it's the kind of thing they like. I have found, and this may be prejudice on my part, that people like myself who are really lit up by aging, really looking forward to the future, are extremely open to new things.
Yes.
Extremely open to trying new things. They may not be in any better shape than anybody else, but they want to be. So
right.
Is this something like that where you get in a very quiet state and you are really thinking about where you're holding in the body? Do you talk to you? Would, let's say, a patient talk to you as a therapist and express what's going on in their body? Do you talk and guide them? How does it work?
I mean, this can be done on the phone as well, which is a lot of work that I've done over recently, because all I'm trying to do is help the person become tuned in to their own body, so they begin to ask themselves the questions. Themselves. Well, why do I feel this way? What is my body trying to say with this muscle spasm, or even with this illness that I might have? Or the first step is in asking the questions, yes, and then becoming silent and listening for the answers. They won't come all at once, but part of it is the silence. Part of it is having a dialogue. Part of it is just, instead of just living in our heads, we have to realize this body is our compass and our navigator. So we begin to ask the questions. You know, I say one of the three things to happiness is playfulness, purpose, and passion.
Mm-hmm.
And the playfulness is in the passion is all in our body. It's not just in our head. And part of getting in the body, I often tell people to remember when they were like a little kid and get in touch with the parts of their joy of what they did so that they can almost assimilate the joyfulness of the little child within and reconnect with that little child within so that the body begins to open naturally.
You know, it's amazing how everything
does
is of a
piece.
Does that
make sense?
It does. It's amazing how everything is of a piece because in the very strict corporate world, more and more people are bringing in things like beach balls, those rubber bats to hit each other over. Honestly, if you've ever been to a facilitation support group in corporations to open up a new sales or marketing technique and to increase creativity, you think you're in a playground. Corporations are spending $15,000, $20,000 for a day to have somebody bring some beach balls around, because the issue of play and laughter and just relaxation opens up creativity. And usually you're a nervous wreck. It's a terrible economy. You got to meet your metrics in the marketing. And the last thing you are is creative under a circumstance like that. So this business of just capturing joy has actually even come to the arenas of the most serious financial institutions, the ones that are getting the stimulus packages. It's not a joke. I always say fun is really serious business.
Well, you know, Adrian, and I applaud, you know, all, you know, the corporations and the people who are doing that, and I do see that movement going forward as well. But what I do see is that sometimes they skip over a piece of helping people connect with the authentic feelings.
Well, because it's not intimate, and they make sure that it's not intimate, and that's why it works to some level probably. But the intimacy is you can only get from really a one-on-one, you know, the way you're talking about, because you got to let it all out. So,
it's an issue.
Exactly.
And what I'm saying is all of that's good, but we can't just jump. I mean, we can't go from A to Z. We do sometimes have to be able to connect with our body. And our culture doesn't really understand grief. It doesn't understand how we are to kind of heal it or even acknowledge it. It actually says just grunt and go on.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
So a little bit of understanding what your pain is about will help you to be able to open more to the joy. So both pieces have to go together. And again, you know, this whole idealized culture image, which is having a break up in a sense, where we're all having to live up to some image that we think our value and our worth is measured is breaking down and breaking up, as this whole Susan Boyle thing was on the news.
Right. Well, let's talk about that for a second. First of all, let me just remind everybody that this is the Longevity Show. This is the radio arm of the Longevity Club. It's the only club, I think, so far in the whole country, even with all the social networking, that is absolutely for people over the age of 45, over the age of 55, 75, that is looking forward to their aging. We're speaking with Michelle Germain. She is a psychotherapist, but she's an expert on relationships and recovery. She hails from the great city of San Diego, and right now her latest book is The Jill Principle, providing a recovery roadmap for women, but it's okay. Men could put a brown paper cover on it, and they could read it too, following a divorce or breakup that's significant in their lives. So you can contact Michelle. I'm going to actually give you a phone number because she's very brave, but first I'm going to give you some email. It's Michelle. At michellegermain.com. I'm going to spell it because it's the same as her website, which is michellegermain.com. And you will also see that on our archives. You know that we archive these shows so you can listen and re-listen 24/7. And if you go to Longevity Club Online, go to the radio section, you'll be able to hear Michelle again, be able to see her website, and her phone number is 760-290-1047, because she gives private trainings, but not just in San Diego, even on the phone. Now, what we just left Michelle with was this. There's a notion here, and I hope it's sustained. I will tell you that here I'm not so optimistic.
Okay.
I think we're a fairly surface culture. I love our culture, but we tend to say if you look good on the outside, you feel good on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
We have standards. Those standards are that you should look like Jennifer, who has a
mm-hmm.
figure of a 12-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
And we just fell in love with a woman who looks mm-hmm. like she comes from a small village in Scotland.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Michelle thinks that this is the beginning of something great. So let's discuss that and see why she's already had a makeover, Michelle.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I still believe that our culture is going to change so that it incorporates all the wonderful things we're talking about, being valued for the external as well as the internal part of who we are. And the Susan Boyle, in a way, was a transformational messenger. And there was a breakup and a moving beyond the cultural idealized image. There was a lot of people touched and moved from sort of judgmental humor to, you know, tears of kindness and dropped within themselves. And I think, of course, it doesn't transform overnight, but that this was a strong recognition that genuineness is valued, and so it helps us in some way to not be so preoccupied with our own external looks, especially as we get older, we're even more preoccupied and we feel more devalued because
yep.
the culture hasn't really caught up with valuing the older people, the elderly people, the people that are beyond 50 or 60 or 70.
Right.
I do think it's a step in the right direction. I think more of these moments and transformational times will come, but it has to come within ourselves too. But I saw this as basically the culture making a shift as well as the individual, so that now we become aware we've been trying to live up to some pressure. And sometimes we don't even aware we are trying to do that. So we connect with ourselves and go, oh, wow, I have been trying to live up to that standard. And what let me get back inside myself and live from the truth within me. What is the standard that I give to myself?
Well, one of the things, and again, we're going to, there's a few very important things I want to hear from you about, but I'm going to say this. One, she already transformed herself a little bit. I mean, she didn't make herself into, you know, Paris Hilton. But that's the kind of pressure in the Western culture we have. So it's not easy. So everybody has to go and forgive yourself for wanting Botox, whether you have it or you don't have it. But we have to forgive ourselves. There's a lot of peer pressure and media pressure to look a certain way. It's really hard to withstand. And the other thing about her is she has the voice of an angel.
Yes.
So, you know, some of us say, well, sure, I mean, if you're a great athlete, you're a genius, you've got the you're an astronaut, you have the voice of an angel, you're a multimillionaire, whatever is a great attribute, you can look a little bit like who did it and ran. But most of us really feel that part of our self-image and self-worth, as you say, self-worth, is how we look and how others see us. Now, as we age, no matter what, you're getting further and further away from that iconic image. And here's the question for you. How do you cope with that? How do we meet that challenge as we age so that we don't, I like your words, so that we avoid disconnecting from our bodies.
Mm-hmm.
We avoid saying, well, let's abandon that because it's, we can't look the way we want to look no matter what we do, because we're either going to have a sarcopenia and things are going to get flabby, or we're going to get so many facelifts that, you know, we'll look like Wildenstein's bride. How do we stop from disconnecting from our bodies? Because it does happen, by the way. I know that as personally.
Absolutely.
And with everybody I talk to.
And for myself included. I mean, I'm part of the culture too, so
yeah.
We get seduced, all of us, into trying to match and be that image because we don't feel good enough as we are. I think it's a continual awareness and consciousness of really what is going to make us happy, and that is living from the truth of who we are. Because the more we try to engage in living an idealized image, the further we get from our own selves and the unhappier we become. If we just repeat that over to ourselves, that's the way we cope, because the seduction of the society is so strong that all of us, you know, are afraid to go outside the door until we got whatever we got. There's nothing wrong with changing your body and wearing different clothes, but the question should be asking, what reasons am I doing this? Am I doing this to try to change someone else's mind about me, or am I doing it because I want to feel better about myself? Am I doing this because so-and-so said so, or am I doing this because it is that I can still stay connected to my genuineness? You see,
one of the things that that you might want to comment on is when something becomes pathologic. Plastic surgeons will always tell you, look, if somebody wants to look a little better or good like they used to look, we feel happy. If somebody comes in and says, I want to look like Angelina Jolie, we think, gee, this is a psychosis or a neurosis. Is there a point in which you should want to look nice, and then there's a tipping point when it really becomes more pathological or more about not having self-esteem than it has to do with actually having self-esteem? How can we detect that in ourselves?
Well, in ourselves. I mean, I can certainly see it, and I think we all can see it. If we go into a room of someone, like if they say a party, and the person can be 60, 70, even 80 years old, but sometimes we feel really good around them. And we don't even know why we feel good
yes.
around them. They may not even have the perfect clothes or the perfect hair, but we feel good and we're drawn to them because of their energy that's coming from deep within themselves. They're opened with their hearts, their bodies, their genuine self, and we don't even know why we feel good. But so be recognizing of that. How we recognize in ourselves that we're gone too far, we have to keep asking ourselves the question, who am I doing this for? Do I have an obsession? Am I really truly happy? Am I losing a part of my genuineness? Am I so worried about what others think about me rather than what I think about myself? So you have to almost like do a little self-analysis, not a self-blame,
yeah.
but self-analysis.
So one of the, I'll just mention Helen Mirren for a minute because she is a great actress. She's getting many awards. I just saw her on the front cover of a tabloid magazine in a bikini saying how gorgeous she was, and she hasn't had any work. So there are some icons, some, you know, celebrity icons. Susan Boyle came out of almost nowhere, but Helen Mirren is very well known, a lot of different roles, that maybe will make some sort of a shift. But I don't see it, I have to tell you, I don't see it happening in droves. Still the issue of how do you get rid of the wrinkles? In this terrible economy, people don't have food, but they're still buying cream for the face. Because, you know, this is the way we feel we'll even get jobs without it. It's there. And before we leave, I do want to talk to you about how that kind of feeling about ourselves might affect our sexuality as we age. Because there are myths around it that you've detected and that I think we ought to hear about, and how much we refrain from sex unnecessarily because, you know, there's a little bit of sagging in the caboose.
Yes. You know, the body image is part of our self-esteem. There's no question about it. And if we can let go of the myth, such as we have to be, you know, thin in order to be attractive, or we have to be totally into exercise program before we can have the vitality, and get back to the basis of intimacy, which is our genuine touch, holding hands, hugging each other. I mean, I can't tell you how many people don't know how to even hug naturally because they're so tense.
Yes.
I mean, the basics of intimacy, which is the holding hands, the touching, the hugging, the affection, that it will warm us up so that we can go into the deeper intimacy, the sexuality. But we have to begin there.
Yeah, I'll tell you, this may be a little racy for our show, but who cares anymore? I saw a show, it was a very long time ago, I'll never forget. It was a show on prostitution. It was a documentary. And this is what struck me. There was a young woman, and it broke my heart because I think she was kind of forced into this by having a terrible home life. But she was a prostitute. She was very well spoken. And they said to her, she was explaining all these sexual things she did. And they asked her, is there anything you won't do with a man? And this is what she said. I won't hug him and I won't kiss him.
Mm-hmm.
He said, why? She says, because that's real love. That's
yes.
intimate. I'm not getting intimate with these guys. They're my customers.
Yes.
So she actually
yes.
understood this.
Well, actually, you just underlined my point.
Yes, exactly right. She got your point big time. She understood what was really important, and she wasn't going to do what was really important. She was the other stuff, that was a job. So
well,
it's very interesting how somebody like that can actually be informative, you know, to us as to what really could be a wonderful sexual experience if we would just forget about the fact that we have to be perfect in bed.
Exactly. And then people become mechanical and they feel the performance pressure. It's all about starting with the basics of the touching and the kissing and the holding hands and the foreplay and all of that that brings us warmth and softens us and brings the intimacy so that it can unfold in the way it needs to unfold.
Now, in the Jill Principle, where you have a roadmap, do you bring people to see what the gift of this, you know, really difficult time in their life might be bringing them?
You know, I'll tell you, Adrian, that is one of the most important things that I think the message of that book is, and in any crisis, because let's face it, how most of us handle the injustice. We don't handle it very well, injustice, right? And we feel the injustice of someone dying, of a job loss, of a divorce. And so how do we get beyond the injustice and move and accept the unacceptable? And in my view, yes, there is some, in the book, a way in which to look at this as a spiritual gift. What is the lesson I'm learning? What is the gift here? Where am I expanding from this experience? Now, we can't jump there quickly. We have to go kick and scream a bit.
Right.
Even the man who lost his job, you know, he had to kick and scream a bit. I'm not going to get him to kind of feel, you know, that
isn't
is a gift
great,
in this.
Right. That would probably be a demented if he just, you know, was that
exactly.
happy.
Exactly. I would be worried if he wasn't kicking
right.
and screaming a bit. But the bottom line is, don't stay kicking and screaming. Find the spiritual gift, the gift in it that's going to propel you into the next phase of your life, because there's a divine plan here and that we must surrender in some ways to it. And I believe that each crisis has that gift in it for us, if we can move beyond the grief and embrace the gift by asking what it is and trying to find the message.
Well, these are wonderful words, and I think there'll be people who'll need more of them. So let me just explain that we are speaking with Michelle Germain. We're about to say goodbye, so this is the time for you to take your pen and paper. You can find her at 760-290-1047. Do not be worried that she's in San Diego. Because she does work on the telephone with her good counseling. And of course, the book is available everywhere. We'll talk about that in 1 second. Her email is Michelle, M-I-C-H-E-L-E, at Michelle Germain, GERMAIN.com. And MichelleGermain.com is her website. Now, is the book out? Is it all available at Amazon now, or how would people get
It is out, and an easier way to get is the name of my website is also beyondbreakups.com, which is a little easier to remember, beyondbreakups.com, and you can order the book through Amazon on my webpage and find out all the other information that you need to know and email me and also sign up for the newsletter. But beyondbreakups.com may be a little bit easier for them to remember.
Well, beyondbreakups.com and the newsletter, I think, for everybody who's listening that is feeling a loss, whether it is the job, the money, the husband, or death in the family, in my case, a mother. That would be something very important to sign up for, beyondbreakups.com. So thank you very much, and we'll talk again. This is terrific.
Thank you very much, Adrian, and I enjoyed being with all of your listeners and you too.
Thank you. And now we're gonna say hello to our next guest, just reminding you that this is the longevity arm, the radio arm of the Longevity Club. The Longevity Club, I think, is the only club that really celebrates aging. I do not have a cold. I've been on the phone for 2 days because, as I always do, I tell you where I'm going. I'm leaving for Georgia, Atlanta, Georgia, for the Kitchen and Bath Show. Now, why am I going to the Kitchen and Bath? Because I'm studying universal design so I can bring back all the good news about how you can make your kitchen and your bath totally accessible. And I'm also going to visit some clients there. Remember that what I do is I'm a marketer for people to reach the baby boom and active senior. And so I have clients like Toto, who create beautiful universal design bathrooms, and Golden Cuisine that create good food for you. And they're all in Atlanta. So I have been on the phone for 2 days making sure I finished all my other work. And right now, I want, this is for me. I really have Marlene Waldock on as a guest today for myself. She has wonderful symposiums. The fifth annual symposium, I think, is now passed. There's one coming out in 2009. She celebrates the possibilities of women in an organization called Because We Are Women. And boy, did she nail the problem, which is that we don't ask. And we're going to talk about that right now. And you can go right now. In fact, if you're on the web and you are able to go to a website, go to becausewearewomen.com. And you'll be able to see all the empowerment information and material she has for you. So let's first say hello to Marlene. Are you there?
Yes, I am, Adrian.
Thank you so much for being on the show.
Oh, well, thank you so much for asking me.
Well,
this is great.
You for me because I have been an entrepreneur and a lawyer and God knows what for a long, long time. And I train people to ask for things and do calls to action in their marketing. Then I get up in front of the room and I don't. That's how entrenched our aversion to asking really can be. And I know that you are a specialist in helping people get beyond that stuff. So let's jump in and ask the question, why don't we? I'm sick and tired of myself already. Why don't we ask?
We don't ask. And what you say is very interesting, that people will ask for things for somebody else. They won't ask for them for themselves.
Yes.
And particularly when it comes to sales and marketing and being an entrepreneur and all of those things, it's very difficult. All of a sudden, this is about you and it's personal. And we're so afraid that somebody will think we're stupid or all of those things. But we basically go back to what we know. We think we know that people are going to say no. And they're not. They might. Some of them will say no, but there's sometimes reasons why they're saying no, because you might not even be asking the right person the right question. So we don't ask because we want to avoid, we think we know that somebody's going to say no. And if we've ever had a situation in our lives that something was extremely important to us, and we asked the question, and the person to whom we asked the question said no, it was like somebody kicked us in the stomach.
Yeah.
And so we're afraid.
We never want to feel that again.
Exactly. So we avoid those knockouts because all of a sudden we take ourselves back to that spot that says, it's going to happen all over again, so I'm not going to ask the question.
So one of the things you do, you have this little paradigm here. Ask could stand for avoid, scary, and knockouts. So those are why we don't. But, you know, it's so interesting. Even when we know that, we kind of play little dancing games in our heads not to ask. That they won't like us. It's too aggressive. This isn't the time. How much should we ask for? We need more research. I mean, this goes on and on and on. How do you break through that? What do you do to be ready to ask?
First of all, if you are avoiding a scary knockout, you need to identify what it is. You need to identify, go back and say, what is it? What do I feel? What does it take me? What was the situation? And define that situation and really look at it and say to yourself, how old was I? What were the circumstances? What happened? Because this is a different time. You're in a different age. You're in a different place. Is that really going to happen to you again? Probably not. And then the next thing to do is to really understand what you're asking for and who you're asking and why you think they are the appropriate person to ask. And then ask yourself a question. What will it mean to them if they say yes? What's going to happen?
It's right there that I think the women's issue comes in, right there. Most of the time, women don't ask because, aside from the aggressiveness or the rejection part of it, they really don't believe that what they're offering has the value that it should. Whereas
That's
a
exactly.
man can look at that, and this sounds terribly sexist, I know, and it's not true of
no.
women. They'll look at that same thing, they'll put a price tag of $50,000 on it, and the woman looks at this and say, $50, but
exactly.
for you, $45.
Exactly. Exactly. You give away your power.
Right.
You don't think you don't have as much self-worth as you should and could. And so you're afraid to ask. And you know, I've asked for a lot of things. There's a lot of people who have said no, and there's a lot of people who have said yes. And I tried to hang on to the philosophy that if you say no, then you're missing out on an opportunity. And I'll just move on to the next person.
Well, I think that some of this, and it isn't immediately apparent. Most women are extremely critical. We criticize ourselves. We criticize the men in our lives. And therefore, when we come up with something that is a value that's saleable, let's say, we'll criticize that too. And so when we go to offer it, what we may be thinking in our head is we know where the bones are buried. We know what's wrong with this. And so we negotiate down before we even ask for anything.
You're right.
I actually find men are less critical. They're less critical of us. I really cannot. We were just talking about sex. I don't know if you heard the...
Yes, I did.
I know women who, they're 5 pounds overweight. They will not get into, they feel terrible about themselves sexually. Do you think there's one man on earth who cares that she's 5 pounds overweight? She's there and breathing. He's starting a party.
But more importantly, do you think there's a man who's 5 pounds overweight that cares about that within himself?
Forget it.
No, they don't.
I think all of this is almost one piece because you say, well, now I'm going to put a value on. I'm going to ask for that amount. And the first thing you think about is, well, it's really not that good. And I know you have a lot of conferences. So tell us how you change or help people see that and maybe overcome some of those things.
Well, one of the things that I suggest in all of this is to surround yourself with the people who can support you and can help you. It's called Assemble Strategic Kith. Find yourself a board of advisors. Get the people around you that can help you, and they'll support that self-worth in you because they will show you the things that are good about what you're trying to do. And they will help give you that confidence. And then just go out. There's an interesting paradigm. We always think that if we change our attitude, then we will change our action. It's actually the other way around. We have to change our action, and then our attitude will follow. Take the step. Try it. Find a person that is friendly enough, you know, that will listen to you, that you can explore what you want to ask with that person so that you don't feel quite as threatened. And if you do it in a way that you're presenting your idea so that everybody wins in this situation and you're showing them how they will benefit from whatever it is that you're asking, then you will start building confidence.
So but if you're really saying is take a chance and get started and see what happens.
See what, and you know, you go sit down with somebody and you say, look, I have this wonderful idea and I'd really like to I'd really like your input. This is what I'm trying to do. How do you think, if it's corporate America that you're after, if it's whoever it is that you want to get on your bandwagon or you want to sell this idea to, sit down with somebody and say, would you help me? Because now then you're asking somebody and you're making them feel very important because you want their expertise and you want their input, and they're going to help you define however it is you're going to ask the next person.
It's giving you confidence. Oh, but it really does need somebody else, like a mentor sitting next to you. If you're a hard case, and most people are a hard case, actually.
Yes, and the other thing that you have to do is do it with passion. When I started my women's event and I decided that I needed people to help me, and I would sit down and say, "Could you do this for me?" I had a catering company who did lunch for 200 people for free, and I sat down and said, "This is what I'm doing. Would you do that for me?" They said, absolutely.
What's been your biggest surprise about what you got for asking? What was your personal biggest surprise of a yes that you didn't get?
Well, I think the catering company, because I didn't really know them. And when I went to them, well, there's two. I went to them and said, I'm looking for somebody to sponsor lunch. And they said, okay. And I said, but I'm asking you to do this for free. Do you understand that? They said, yes, we do. And you're going to put us in front of how many people? 150.
Uh-huh, sure.
So they immediately saw the benefit. Mm-hmm. I also met another fellow one day at a business event. I did not know him. I was looking for somebody to provide me with a specific type of a pen that I want to give away at this event. And he was doing imprinted items, and he said to me, well, I'd like to send you this box of stuff. And I said, I don't need that. What I need is somebody to sponsor pens for me for an event that I'm having, and I need about 250 to 500. He did a couple of things, and he has now provided me with those pens three different times and is a good friend.
So you did two things. You not only asked for something, you also said no to something that was offered. That's even harder sometimes.
Well, right. I said, I don't need that.
You didn't
want
it. Right.
And I didn't know the man, which was the funniest part. I had never seen him before in my life. And I just said, this is what I need. And I guess when I looked at him and said it in a way that it was either you're going to say yes or you're going to say no, and whichever it is, I'm going to move on.
Well, let's talk about a protocol, because I know you hold a lot of events. And by the way, before we go to this protocol, let's just say that we're speaking with Marlene Waldock. She holds events, empowerment events, I'm going to call it that. to energize, to inspire. There's lots and lots of testimonials about how people went from those events to doing extraordinary things in their lives. If you want to see that, you can go to becausewearewomen.com. But as I said about Dr. Germain's book, if you're a man, it's a website. They won't know that you're on it, so don't worry about it. You can go on it, too. Nobody will notice.
True. Yeah.
So you have all these events. How do we, when is the next one? Where is it being held? Do you have it scheduled yet, or do we need to continue to look at your website?
Well, you could do one of two things. You can continue to look at the website. I'm talking with some people in Atlanta to take it to Atlanta. I've done it in New Jersey several times, and I'd like to take it out of New Jersey. You can also go to the website, and it says put me on your mailing list.
Yes.
And I can put you on the mailing list, and you will get updates, and you will get an occasional newsletter and some information. And I do some other workshops. I'm working towards doing some webinars or teleseminars for some of these things, just asking, because I do this as a workshop. And so I'm going to try to do it as a webinar or a teleseminar so that people can come on and actually work on this without having to be in the physical location. But those are the two ways. Check the website or go on the website and send me an email that says, put me on your mailing list, and I'll keep you updated as to when it's going to happen.
Well, it's fascinating stuff. I mean, because I'm a marketer and because I teach people actually how to ask for clients at their seminars when they're up there talking, I have a very, very specific protocol for this. I am always amazed when I don't. And that's how we started this conversation.
Right.
But I also know people, and this is what I'd like you to comment on, who I call natural askers. And I'm going to give you two real people. One is Enid Borden. Enid Borden, you may not know her name, everybody listening, but she is the director of Meals on Wheels. And she's mm-hmm. a buddy. And I have actually been in a room where she was offered $50,000 contribution. And she said,
wow.
You are insulting me. I almost fell off my chair. So the medics almost had to take me away. And she walked out of that room with $1.25 million.
Yeah.
And I have also, when iVillage was created, I was the radio voice of iVillage, which is for women only. I also walked around with Nancy, who created it. She didn't even have a piece of paper in her hand. And she would walk in and ask for $1 million to support. Of course, it was the dot-com bubble time,
mm-hmm.
where sort of people were handing out money for that. There was a foundation for this kind of thing. It was a crazy thing with the dot-coms then. But nevertheless, not to have a business plan, just to walk in a room, have a meeting, and ask for millions and get it is. Those are real askers. To me, it's like being an artist. I think you're born with it. So my question to you is, can you learn it? Can you learn it if you're not good at it, or should you just get a partner who's good at it?
You can do both of those things. You can learn it by doing two things. One, you have to really think big, and you have to have great vision, because those two people that you talked about were visionaries, and they were able to communicate that vision so that when she said, no, I don't want the $50,000, I need, you know, $1 million or $2 million, she gave them the picture of what that would look like.
It
however
would look
she
like
communicated.
Feeding hungry people, I'll tell you exactly what she said.
And that's what she did. She gave them the picture. And she did it with such passion. When you do things with a great deal of passion, and I'm sure you know this, when you do that passion, you will draw people into your space, and they will then, they'll become a part of it, and they'll want to do it. There was a book that I read on leadership, and Winston Churchill, during the war, there's a great speech that he gave to the coal miners, and because they didn't think that they were important, and he gave this wonderful speech, and he, with vision, showed them their importance so that they went back to those coal mines and did everything they needed to do. So if you can learn to believe in yourself and the vision that you have and share it, that is what will help you get what you want.
So that's passion first. That's passion first.
That's passion and vision. I mean, vision and values, those are the two things that will give you that sense of what I'm giving you is a great thing and what I'm asking you for isn't all that much.
Now, that's interesting from a woman's point of view, because here's the prejudice again. I think women are very visionary. You know,
yes, they are.
we know the name Faith Popcorn, most people do. And
yes, I do.
another buddy of mine, Edith Wiener. Those would be the two corporate visionaries that write books people know about. They're both women. You know, being a visionary is it takes so much sensitivity and ability to see the whole picture without your own personal aggression in it. So you would think that that part of it, that passion and that vision, would come fairly easy to women. Is that what starts to come out at your meetings and your seminars?
Yes, because we actually, we do some things, because the workshop, the seminar, is specifically about who you are and not what you do. And one of the things that we do is, first of all, everyone has to pass their workbook to the person next to them, and they give them permission to want anything they want. Because we don't give ourselves permission. We probably see this big picture, and we have this fabulous vision for how things can be, and then we think, oh, but you know what? I can't really do that because I don't have permission to do that. I'm not entitled to that. It's not about entitlement. It's about looking at this and saying, this is a wonderful thing, and I can try, and I will get people to help me if I believe it, and I just share it with them. So, you know, we do that, and you write a vision. I mean, I ask people to write a vision statement. Imagine it's the end of your life, and you're sharing with your friends all the wonderful things that happened to you. What do you want to tell them? Think about if you could dream it up, any way you wanted to dream it up, what do you want to tell them?
You know, it's so interesting, too, because studying where you're stopped. Most women, and particularly ones that are in our longevity club, are very strong. They really lead good lives. And I have a feeling that the people who come to your groups are the same because, you know, people who don't, they don't step up to the plate for these kinds of things.
No,
so on the books, they look great. But there's always something stopping them. They may stop ahead of most everyone else, but they get stopped. And that self-inner evaluation as to where you're being stopped and then breaking through that with the help of others at a seminar like yours is really, that really is invaluable. That's a wonderful thing to overcome where you're stopped.
It's great fun, and we do an exercise where you have to throw away the things that are in your way and physically write down on a piece of paper, this is what's in my way, I'm going to throw it away. I'm going to get rid of it, because focus on what you want for you. And I really do think that we need to give ourselves permission to want what we want. It's okay. It's okay. It's like you were talking to your earlier guest about sex. Think about how many women are in relationships and sexually they're deprived because they don't even know how to ask for what they want or tell somebody, I don't like this. I'd rather you did this.
Right. And that is taboo. Getting any kind of satisfaction becomes taboo. But,
exactly.
You know, it's also interesting, and I'm sure this goes on in your groups, what people are comfortable asking for that other people think are unbelievable, and then the next guy is comfortable asking for something different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we admire each other in what we can do because certain things do come easy. I'm a travel writer, and I have absolutely no problem asking for free travel. So I think they should send me for the $20 million up to space. Why? Because I'm so passionate about travel, there is no end of value that I believe that I'm giving to the people who send me on trips. Other things, like my books, let's say, things like that, which may cost $20, oh, my God, to tell people to go to the back of the room and buy it, you would think I was asking them to drink Kool-Aid.
Mm-hmm.
And take, you know, take a bullet. What you think you are valuable and bring value to others for, all of a sudden becomes very easy to ask because it's not for you.
Well, you know, one of the things that you can do to help that is to take a journal and make it your compliment journal so that every time somebody says to you, wow, that was really great, or you really did a good thing, or I really appreciated your insight, or whatever it might be that they're saying to you, write it down and keep it somewhere, because on those days that you don't feel quite as good about yourself as you could, go read it. Because you will drive into your subconscious all those positive things and understand the difference you're making in people's lives by the value that you're bringing.
Well, and these are great words. And this was perhaps one of my favorite hours that we've had in all of our show going, this particular one going on almost a year, and all my shows going on since 88, a long time. And we're going to be staying in touch. I'm actually going to Atlanta, where you've had some of your shows. I live in the great state of New Jersey, so it isn't going to be hard to attend the next one. And we'll watch becauseweareWomen.com in order to find out when the next symposium is. And maybe maybe we should do a teleseminar.
Well, we could do that. Of course, it's a long day. It starts at 8 in the morning, goes to about 3 in the afternoon. I have some wonderful guests. I bring people on to share their own experiences. It's very interactive. People stand up. You'd be surprised, the people who stand up and walk to a microphone in a room full of people, some of whom they know, some of whom they don't know, and ask for the things that they want in life.
Wow. That I
but
love.
But I look forward. I really look forward to talking to you offline. That would be great.
That's great. Particularly if we can bring a few venture capitalists in the room. I'll ask.
Oh, that would be good.
That'd be good. Okay, we thank you so much. And for everybody else, thank you. And for everybody else, of course, we'll be back next week, as we always are. I will be, I think, just getting off the plane from Georgia, and I'll tell you all about kitchens and bathrooms. What could be better than that to ask for? Accessibility and adaptability.